We've got a very special guest in the studio this afternoon, Javon Jackson. Welcome to Ottawa.
Thank you very much.
And how was your flight down?
It was okay. Yeah, it was nice.
Is this your first time in Ottawa?
Yes, it is. First time to this part of Canada.
Is this the first time with the James Williams ICU band?
No, I made some other concerts with this group before, and I've known James for quite a while when I was going to college in Boston, Massachusetts, at Berklee College of Music. James was living in Boston at the time, so right. I've known James for quite a bit and been a fan of his from looking at him on records with Art Blakey and things like that.
One thing I was fascinated about was your upbringing and how your dad would play these Sonny Stitt recordings for you.
Yeah, my father actually, Sonny Stitt and Gene Ammons, and his favorite saxophonist was Gene Ammons, and I liked Sonny Stitt, but he took me to see Sonny Stitt at a young age, so I got quite an experience in terms of going to see musicians and saxophone players. I got to see Dexter Gordon and a lot of musicians in an early period of my life, which was very inspirational.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've got a Sonny Stitt recording I wanted to play for you, Autumn in New York.
Oh, and sure.
This is from 1967. Walter Bishop on piano, Tommy Potter on bass, and Kenny Clark on drums.
All right.
Thank you.
from 1967. That was the great Sonny Stitt and Autumn in New York. My guest this afternoon is Javon Jackson, who will be appearing tonight with the James William ICU Band at Confederation Park. And one thing I want to ask you, Javon, what was it about Sonny Stitt that really inspired you?
Beginning as an alto saxophonist, 10 or 11, and listening to him and just the velocity, obviously, and the notes. But as I got older, the command of the instrument and his phrasing ability and what we use the term swing or the feeling that he was able to present as a musician. But I got to meet him at 12 years old, and it was just a situation that really turned my life around in terms of meeting a musician and just getting a few minutes to talk to him. And he was so very warm and caring and shared a lot of things. And it's almost like it happened yesterday, because I still remember. It's very vivid in my mind. And it was funny because I was just in Stuttgart, Germany, and Sonny Stitt has a daughter who is a road manager for Joe Bowie, defunct, is a group.
Right.
And I sent her a picture of Sonny Stitt and myself at about 12 years old. We were just talking about it because I met her a few years ago. But Sonny Stitt was, and Ron Carter, the bassist, was standing in this conversation, and he was saying how much that he loved playing with Sonny Stitt too as well. So he was just a spirited musician, as you could hear on that that recording you just played.
What was the defining moment for you where you said, okay, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I want to play music. Was there one point in your life that just changed everything around?
Well, see, in my home, my mother, every Saturday morning when she'd get up and clean the house, that's what we would hear. I heard Poinciana and those kinds of recordings. So by the time I was able to get a instrument, I knew I wanted to be a musician. And then also, I think reading the back of record covers, about 13 or 14, I began to read the back of some of my parents' records, and it was Art Blakey and Jazz Messenger record on the back, A Night in Birdland, and Art Blakey talked about how he wanted to leave a place for the youngsters and keep young musicians. So I knew about the tradition of Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers. So that was a kind of a thing that it was in the back of my mind that I wanted to be a part of that fraternity, if you will, a tradition. So that was my motivation. But probably from the time I really got the instrument, I pretty much knew I wanted to be a musician.
Now, the composition Web City holds special meaning for you. That was the composition you were playing when you first hooked up with Art Blakey?
Oh, right. Yeah. When I was sitting in with Art, they were playing that particular piece. And and it was late during the engagement. It was a club in New York, and I went to sit in, and Art let me sit in, and I played on that number, and then after that number, he asked me to come back the next night. So, right, it was definitely it was the beginning of my manhood as a musician and learning how to be able to play, and he really changed my life, Art Blakey.
Do you find that there's a great void in jazz now that Miles is gone and Blakey's gone, and those two important universities are no longer around for jazz musicians?
Absolutely. I think that for me, I feel very fortunate and honored and privileged to have been a part of those kind of situations in terms of sometimes I think that today there's not the situations for young musicians to have an opportunity to have a tutelage under someone with some experience. A lot of musicians now, and that's just the way it is. I'm not knocking it, but I like the way I came through it, whereas I get in a band and you learn about some particular situations, about dress code and about being on time and about arrangements and playing in a band and getting along with individuals before you get your own band. So you kind of learn how things go, travel situations, and being around a guy like Art Blakey was so special, because if I had a question about Billie Holiday or Charlie Parker or Thelonious Monk, this wasn't secondhand information. It was firsthand, because those were his friends. So it made it a very special kind of situation. So I think a lot of musicians, younger musicians, when they come to New York, they're so hard-pressed to get a record contract or to get their own band, as opposed to coming to New York and being able to get in someone else's band and establish yourself from that point, because the records will do a lot for you, obviously, for visibility and publicity. But you need that validation, if you will, to play with a established artist. You know what I mean? And I think that's very, very important. It's just like growing up. You can't grow up to be an adult without being around some other adults and some good role models here and there that help mold you. And you come through that and you're your own man, but people that see you within your family spectrum, they say, well, you remind me some things you do of your mother, some things of your father, but you're still Randy, but you come from somewhere. And I think that's where any kind of art or any kind of person, regardless what you're speaking about, they come from a certain place. And then they're able to go, it doesn't matter, it was Michael Jordan, whoever, they come from somewhere. There's some kind of relationship that you can relate them to. Then after a while, you're able to be your own self to a point.
Did you ever play with Miles Davis? Did you ever?
Never was lucky enough. I met him once because one of my closest friends was his saxophonist, Kenny Garrett. But I never got the opportunity to play with him. But I met him and talked to him just briefly. But I never got to play with him.
Do you do a lot of practicing?
Sure, I better. I practice as much as I can. But as you know, more responsibilities come about and to travel. And working, it can be hard. But if I'm at home and I'm in a good rhythm, I try to get 3 or 4 or 5 hours a day with music. But I'm trying to play the piano. I've been taking piano lessons now, so that kind of takes away from the saxophone. But I try to. I'm going to go do it today at the hotel.
Yeah. Many years ago, I remember reading a story about Dexter Gordon. He was sitting in a bus station. And he actually got inspired to write a composition just by listening to the sound of the wheels from the buses that they were making. What inspires you when you're writing?
Well, a lot of different kinds of situations. I remember one time I was somewhere and I heard a kind of a montuno, which is a phrase that's used for Latin music, and I heard a kind of montuno, kind of a rhythm. And that kind of inspired me to write the song that is a title track from the CD has been out for Blue Note, For One Who Knows. So sometimes, yeah, you can be in different situations and influenced by different kinds of things. So it depends, right? But I've been influenced like that sometimes.
Now tell me a bit about Notes in Three. We're going to be playing that coming up in a couple of seconds. How did that come about?
Actually, Notes in Three is a... Actually, it is a song that I wrote when I was with Art Blakey, and actually that was in musically it's 4/4 time. So but Notes in Three is the same song, but I just changed it in three. So it's like but what happened? I wanted to do something in 3/4, and I wanted to play that song. And I just kind of had some ideas, and the musicians in the band said, "Why don't you try it in three?" So we tried it in three. But again, it was something originally written when I was with Art Blakey.
So we're going to give that a listen. We've got Jackie Terrison on piano, Fareed Hack.
Right, Fareed Hack
on guitar. Peter Washington's on bass. Billy Drummond, who seems to be getting around these days with a lot of musicians, is on drums. And Cyro Baptiste is on percussion. This is Javon Jackson from his CD for the Blue Note label. The name of the album is called For One Who Knows, and the composition is called Notes in Three. Thank you. That was music from Javon Jackson and a composition entitled Notes in Three, a song written by Javon Jackson. Now, Javon, you just came back from Europe with the Blue Note All-Stars.
Right.
Now, how did that band come about?
Well, it was kind of an idea spearheaded by Bruce Lundvall, who was the president of Blue Note, and he had an idea of putting the musicians, some musicians on the label together and have them go out and do a tour and help, you know, kind of promote us as a group and just promote a lot of the artists that are on Blue Note in a group situation. So that's what happened, and we did the West Cannes Festival. We were here in, late June, mm-hmm. and we played all through we didn't come to Ottawa, but we played all through Canada, and then we went to Europe, and we just got back. So we've been traveling. We played a week in New York prior to all that, so we've been out about maybe 6 weeks, and then we're going to L.A., and then they're actually, well, the band's going to Japan. I can't go to Japan. I had a prior commitment, but they're going to Japan. So there's a lot of things going on in terms of the group. So it was a very fun situation. And guys, everybody in the band has a kind of a different approach. So it makes for a different, it makes for unique music.
Will this band be recording again, or is this a one-off?
No, definitely. We're definitely gonna make another CD. Bruce, again, our president, really wants to make another recording with this group. So we're definitely gonna make another recording, and I think it's good. I mean, because it's nice to be able to fuse ideas and be around musicians and travel your peers and things. Because more recently, I've been playing with a lot of people like Freddie Hubbard and Elvin Jones. It's always great too, but it's also good too to be in a band kind of with peers and to share music and philosophies and stuff like that. And it was a fun situation, or it is a fun situation.
Now, before we get to the next track from that CD, I just wanted to ask you, how is the political situation in the States affecting the jazz community? I've heard from several sources that things are sort of looking bad now regarding funding and playing in venues, and that Europe seems to be more appealing.
Well, I think Europe in general has probably always been more appealing in terms of the respect, or even in Canada. I think sometimes, and I don't want to offend anyone, any Americans out there, but sometimes America in general kind of treats the music as a stepchild, which is, this is their art form, and this is something that is, it was without America, there would be no jazz. So it's something that I wish we could embrace more in a situation in New York, in America, New York, but it's not. So we have to go where you can go to play the music and to make a living. So we go to Europe, we go to Canada, we go to Brazil, we go to Japan, we go wherever that we can make a buck, basically. But there's things to do in America too. But I think coming up today, and I wasn't playing 30 years ago, but I think coming up today, you have to be smarter. And I think that if you come up with the same kind of ideology that the guys had 30, 40 years ago, because there were more bands and there were more clubs, more venues to play in, if you're not smart and things that really put things together, you can kind of be in a quandary, because things now, there's so much lead time. I mean, when this, for instance, this festival is over, they'll start booking for the festival probably by the end of the year. They'll have ideas on who's going to be in the next festival. And by next February, the festival's probably booked, probably, I would assume. So there's so much lead time. So you have to, early bird really gets the worm. You really have to be aware and jump on it in that fashion. But, I mean, the politics probably hurt everyone and every unless you're a basketball player, they seem to be making the most money at sports. But in general, I think it's something that all people of all professions, funding with radio stations. We were just talking about that on the break, about stations going under, which really hurts the overall presentation for the music, because that's our outlet. And I mean, it used probably used to be in cities like this, used to be one or two, three stations that played jazz music all day, 24 hours a day. Now you have it where it's a few hours a week. I mean, New York is lucky to have one that's all day, but that's not, if you go through America, I would be hard pressed probably to find a city who does 24 hours every day, day in and day out. It's not probably not that many. Probably be, I don't know, maybe 20 to 25, if that many. I don't know the numbers, but I know it's not as strong as we would like it. So we just have to persevere, trying, and hopefully the things will kind of turn around. But I think certain situations with education coming into the fold with music and academia has helped to kind of rejuvenate the spirit of the music. So,
what are you listening to these days that really appeals to you, or really turning you?
Honestly, I've been listening to Frank Zappa. Actually, I recorded one of his compositions on this current CD that's coming out in September. And I'm listening to Brazilian music. I like a lot of Brazilian music. And then I'm listening to a lot of the music that I grew up with as a child, like Parliament.
Funkadelic.
Some stuff like that. Yeah, stuff like that. But I'm still listening to a lot of John Coltrane, obviously. But as much as I can listen to, I've been trying to listen to Chopin, too. So it just depends. I'm trying to get a wide range of things coming into my brain.
Yeah.
And so I don't get... I don't stagnate myself.
Pianist Daryl Grant was in town last week,
uh-huh.
And he mentioned during his show that he's going way, way back to James Johnson and some of the early innovators of jazz. Have you been going back to the Fletcher Henderson period and reevaluating what they've done and trying to incorporate that into your music?
Honestly, not really. I mean, Art Blakey, who played with Fletcher Henderson, used to sing a lot of things to us, and I've gone back and listened to some of the things. But guys like Fletcher Henderson and Jimmy Lunsford and a lot of musicians like that that had bands back during that time, I'm not as well-versed as I probably should be. But you take it in as much as you can, a little bit at a time. But I've been trying to go back and listen to older saxophone players, whether it be Louis Jordan and Benny Carter and musicians from that period, and try to go back and listen to... I've been listening to saxophone players like... I'm trying to think of a musician, saxophone player from Chewberry, from Pittsburgh.
And Hawkins.
Yeah, I've always listened to Coleman, but I've trying to been going back a little further, listening to maybe some of the more obscure, kind of like Bud Johnson or musicians like Don Byas, stuff like that. So I've been trying. Yeah,
I find some of the younger musicians tend to just go back to the sort of bebop period, never go beyond that, never, you know, listen to the Hot Five or the Hot Seven or Jelly Roll Morton stuff, which to me is just incredible music when
sure,
it was done.
That's for sure. Yeah, I've been listening to some of the, like you say, quintessential Louis Armstrong or some stuff like that. Well, see, the information out there now is everything is so kind of, and again, credit has to be given to people like Charlie Parker. Once they came on the scene and do it Dizzy Gillespie, the stuff started to balloon so greatly. And with John Coltrane coming from that school and Miles, that was the school they came from. And then it blossomed. And sometimes it's hard for guys, as they get older, they will go back, hopefully, but to go back more than 30 years. But like you say, you can go all the way back, and there's some stuff back there, man. It's, you say, James Johnson and Willie Lyon Smith, Albert Ammons, Gene Ammons' father. So there's so much music out there.
Yeah.
And that we're just talking about jazz. We're not talking about blues. If you talk about blues, then you got to talk about Lightnin' Hopkins and all these other people, and Lightnin' Howlin' Wolf. So there's so much stuff out. There's so much information.
It always seems to me that, unlike any other art form, jazz seems to be a real vocation. Like, it's not something that you just get into for 2 or 3 years and that's it. It's like a lifelong journey.
There is no end. There is no finish line. with this music. I mean, you can get to be 55, 60, 65. Met musicians, Elvin Jones in the late 60s, who are still inspiring and still learning things. So it's that kind of, it's a study, as it is with a doctor in medicine. I mean, you never get to the point where you have it figured out. Every day there's something new to learn. As a human being, I mean, every day, I'm sure there are people, the older you get, you feel like you know everything, and every day you say, wow, the older I get, I feel like I know less, or I learn a little bit more. I think every day, if you really try to find a positive out of whatever negative is there, you'll find something else that you didn't find before. Or if you really work hard, you can find, you'll find some nuance or some little gem that's a little different. And that's how the music is, right?
We had a real legend of the tenor sax appear here in Ottawa last night, Stanley Turrentine.
All right.
How has he influenced you?
Stanley has been a big influence on me. First of all, last year he used me on a concert. He played the Chicago Jazz Festival, and he used me as a special guest. And again, that was a good situation. Not that I'm disrespectful, I'm very respectful of him, but it was definitely a more of a humbling situation to see how Stanley can go and the way he plays and the way he can command an audience. As a horn player, that's very hard to do. I mean, he can have the audience in his palm of his hands the way like some vocalists do, which is very, sometimes can be, you know, it's a marvel in itself. But Stanley is a person that I've been listening to since I was a little person, too. And so having a rapport with him, which I do, is very nice. You know, I can call him on the phone and ask him, hello, how you doing, Stanley? We have a rapport together. And that's really special. And that's the special thing about coming to New York and beginning to meet musicians, that you can actually have a rapport with a Herbie Hancock, a rapport with a Freddie Hubbard, or a rapport with a Ron Carter, or a rapport with Max Roach. And that really makes the music special, and it helps when you put everything into perspective, and they're just human beings like you, and they think the way you do for the most part. They have feelings just like you, and it helps kind of ground sometime your perspective. And it's a very special. And Stanley is, I wish I could have been here to hear him. Stanley's my man.
Amazing. Do you do a lot of clinics teaching, trying to get younger people?
Sure, I've done some things. What I do is go to colleges and do clinics and speak to students and stuff like that. And then I've been doing some high school things like that. Yeah, because it helps me to articulate my feelings verbally, obviously, like we're doing now. Whereas when you're with the instrument, you're articulating your emotions, but people don't get to hear you speak all the time. And I think it helps me and my intellect to do that. So, yeah, I try to get involved in situations. I've done things I just did some things last year with Howard University and some universities down in North Carolina, Duke, and some other things. So that's something that, and I'm doing a 3 or 4 colleges when school starts. College starts here in September. So,
do you see an eagerness out there from the younger people to really embrace jazz and get into the music and learn?
Oh yeah, there's definitely a lot of musicians out there, and there's more musicians actually today, with less places to go and less opportunities. So that makes it even harder for them. I just, knock on wood, I was lucky enough to be in the presence of Art Blakey, and I was blessed and very lucky to be able to start my career with that. So it was kind of a springboard to other situations just by the fact that I was a jazz messenger. So other guys have it rougher than me, but in some ways they might have it easier. You know what I mean? It's like a trade-off. So you just have to find a way to carve your space, and you have to remain humble, but you have to be confident, and you just have to go out and challenge the music.
We're going to listen to a track from the Blue Note All-Stars CD entitled Blue Spirit, released on Blue Note. Tim Higgins on trumpet, Greg Osby on alto sax, Kevin Hayes on piano, Isiet, who was in town this week playing with several musicians, is on bass, Bill Stewart's on drums, and of course our guest this afternoon, Javon Jackson on tenor sax. And Javon, we're going to listen to a track that was written by you called Nayman. Now, any background on that track? Does it have any meaning?
Right, Nayman is my son. He was just born about 15 months ago. And so that's what the song was written for.
Okay. So let's give that a listen. We'll be right back.
Ottawa International Jazz Festival promises hot jazz in the month of July. Come listen to performers such as Carol Welsman, the Pablo Vasquez Sextet, and the Rene Lee Quintet as they soothe your soul July 19th to the 28th. Single day passes are $10, but 10-day concert passes are only $25 until July 1st and $30 after that. For tickets, call Ticketmaster at 755-1111 or purchase your Jazz 96 Concert Pass at one of 44 locations in Ottawa, including all Canada Trust branches. The 1996 Ottawa International Jazz Festival. For more information, call 594-3580.
We're here this afternoon with special guest Javon Jackson, and just got a call from a listener, Javon, who wanted to know what Zappa track you're going to be working with.
Oh, well, the piece I recorded was Zoot Allures.
Okay.
It's from, I think that's it's the title of his a CD, or a record, called Zoot Allures.
Yeah, Zappa was when you say original, he was definitely a true original.
Oh, that's for sure. He was genius. Yeah. He was a very, very strong person musically and strong with his commitment. And so I had heard this piece, and I said, wow. So I've been listening to some more of his things, and I'm very intrigued. And he was a musician who appreciated jazz. I mean, he did songs where he dedicated things for Eric Dolphy, and mm-hmm. so he was, I'm a big fan.
Now, is this going to be on your next CD?
That's on the upcoming CD that will be out in September 3rd, about a month, a little bit over a month. And that features Cassandra Wilson was on a song, and Fareed Haq again was a guitarist, and Billy Drummond was my drummer, and Peter Washington was the bassist, and Cyril Baptiste, and also Lonnie Smith, the organist, was on a couple of selections. And we did a wide range of things. I did a Muddy Waters song with Cassandra. We did a Frank Zappa piece. I did a Serge Gainsbourg piece, a French composer.
There's also some Ellington on there, I believe, right?
No Ellington.
No?
No. But I did an Ellington song. The title was Duke Ellington's Sound of Love, but it was a Charles Mingus piece. And I did a Charles Mingus medley, actually, a couple of selections. And then I did a couple of originals, and then I did a Gismonti piece as well. So kind of mixed it up.
Yeah, Egberto is still going strong in South America.
I think I've been listening to a lot of Brazilian music. I love João Gilberto and Gilberto Gil, and so those kinds of the rhythm, something that's very intriguing for me.
Yeah, it tends to seduce you and really get you in the groove.
Yeah, you could say that.
So what's up for you after Ottawa? What do you have?
I'm going back to New York for the week. And then I'm going to Los Angeles. I have a concert out there with the Blue Note All Stars. And then I have a week engagement in New York with Louis Hayes, the drummer, great drummer Louis Hayes. And
that's a name from the past.
Yeah. From the Cannon Bar Adderley days. And then I'm going to the Newport Jazz Festival. And then I'm going to Israel with Elvin Jones. And then I have the rest of my year is very busy. And then I have a month and a half of my own group. And then I'm playing with Annie Ross from Lambert Hendrickson Ross. I'm playing with her for a week engagement, and I'm going to Spain, and it's a lot of travel.
One thing I wanted to ask you was, in the past year or two, the internet has really blossomed, and I've noticed a lot of musicians are getting involved with the internet as a way of promoting the music, and have you been doing a lot of that?
Well, yeah, but most musicians have been getting involved with it. A couple of years ago, a couple of friends said, you should get a computer. And I said, oh, man, I don't think I could ever do that. So I got a computer, and I've been hacking because I'm a computer dummy. So I've been getting more and more illiterate as opposed to literate with the computer. But it takes up a lot of your time because when I first got the computer, I had a program on there for solitaire, and I probably would spend like 3 hours on. So it's very addictive kind of situation. So I've tried to, there's just not enough hours in the day to do everything. So now I try to get up in the morning and I, you know, email people and friends and get my typing chops back up. Cause I used to type in high school, but try to get that stuff back together. So, but it's very fun.
Would that be good for your playing?
Well, it's very creative. I mess with the internet now, I think. So sometimes it correlated with music. It kind of, sometimes it helps take me away. It just kind of helps my mind kind of.
But actually typing on the keyboard.
Would it help my fingers?
Yeah.
I doubt it, but maybe, I don't know. I never thought about it, but I don't think so.
Did you ever try those exercises that Sonny Stitt told you to do with the telephone book on the stomach? Like, how did that work?
I did it. I don't think, for me at that time, it didn't do anything, but he told me to do it, so I did it. And it was a lot of things like that he told me to do, but I'm sure it had some meaning. And but at that time for me, I don't know how much, I was at the very embryonic stage in my career in terms of playing the saxophone. So there was so many other things that needed to be gotten together, along with breathing too as well. But I'm sure if he said it had some kind of merit to it. I didn't do it for very long.
Well, Javon, it's been a real pleasure having you on the show this afternoon, and we're going to go out with one more number. This is one that you've selected from the Blue Note All-Star CD,
right.
Written by Kevin Hayes. Can you tell me a little bit about the...
I don't really know what the title is derivative of. It's just called Our Trip. It was a selection that he wrote for the group, and it's a nice vehicle to play on.
Okay.
But I just want to also say that, you know, I'm here to help support, you know, James Williams and his vocal ensemble that he has, and it's called Intensive Care Unit. So I'm happy to be here, because actually the saxophone player that actually is with this group is Billy Pierce, who was my first close friend, is one of my teachers when I went to Berkeley. So it's nice to be able to support him. I think he had to leave town or go out of Europe somewhere. So it's nice to be here with James. James is a really, really dynamic musician and an individual. So it's going to be nice to fuse music with him.
Well, I'll tell you, Ottawa's really looking forward to seeing you tonight with James Williams. And another plus you have on your side is the weather. The weather hasn't been too good this past week, and the past couple of days have been really sunny. So hopefully the music will be cooking tonight.
Yeah, it's been very nice. I can say all the representatives from my record company, EMI, have taken me all over and been very warm and very nice, so that's always makes it very pleasurable.
Well, it's pleasurable for us to have you here in Ottawa, and we'll give a listen now to Our Trip. This is Javon Jackson with the Blue Note All-Stars. My name is Randy McElligott, and you're listening to In Transition here on CHUO FM. Well, my apologies. That was not our trip. That was a song entitled Free Hop, and that was from the Blue Note All-Stars CD entitled Blue Spirit. And my thanks again to Javon Jackson, who was very, very kind to spend some time with me this afternoon and just rap a little bit about life and jazz and the festival this afternoon. Actually, this evening at Confederation Park, the final concert in the series, and this is a definite, definite must-see. Make it down to Confederation Park for the 8:30 show, and you will not regret it. James Williams will be appearing with his band called ICU. And what I'd like to do now is play an album of James Williams. It's released on the Sunnyside label.